Welcome back to The Wild Podcast, and thank you so much for bearing with me. It's been 11 weeks since I started quarantine, and I took a little break from recording as I tried to adapt to this new life. I'm sure you're all doing your bit to stay safe and adjust, and I truly hope everyone listening is doing well. We hear about fitness, fads, trends, meal plans, strength training, cardio training, low carbs or calorie deficit. Health goals can get really overwhelming very quickly. On this episode, I got to sit down with a lovely friend of mine, Laura Dorgan, who also happens to be a personal trainer here in New York. Laura trains men and women all over the world to reach their own health goals, whatever that might be. Building strength, mobility, gaining weight, losing weight. Laura will also be the first person to tell you that she has an app. She has hundreds of exercises, meal plans, recipes, and so much more. She has thousands of Instagram followers following her journey here in New York as she shares an insight to what exercise and food looks like for a personal trainer, along with her struggles with endometriosis. Laura joined me on the podcast to talk about some fitness and nutrition myths and the biggest and best muscle that we all need to exercise. It's, of course, the brain. Each and every one of us has a unique goal for our body, even if that goal is just maintenance. For some, the health journey means so much more, and in many cases, it can be a huge wall to tackle. Join Laura and I in our real chat about the health journey and take a look inside what a program with Laura might look like. Thank you, first of all, for coming on. I know that you're always busy. You're always up late nights working. And I appreciate you taking the time out to come on and chat and to share all your insights and expert advice.
No, I'm delighted to.
And is this your first podcast? Or have you been on?
It actually is.
I know you've been on the radio a lot.
It actually is my first podcast, funnily enough. So, yeah, radio and stuff. I've been on numerous times, but I've never been on a podcast. So delighted to be on yours.
No problem talking anyway.
No fear there.
So Laura, you have been working in the fitness industry for years, and you have your own app that you're teaching girls how to exercise and take care of themselves and reach their fitness goals from all across the world, because the app allows you to do that. And I'm sure now is the best time for people to kind of get on board, and you've probably seen an increase in people being concerned about their fitness routines and everything else. Tell us a little bit about what you do and what it is that you kind of, your kind of competitive edge, considering that the industry is quite saturated.
Well, yeah, the industry is, especially I think in the last year or two more than ever, with fitness in particular, has become saturated. I do try and, how I try and differ myself to a lot of other personal trainers as such, is I try and use mental health, which I think has a huge role to play in fitness, along with obviously the type of fitness that they want to do. So, I mean, you have somebody who wants to gain strength, who has a knee problem or has to correct that. You have someone who wants to lose weight, which is the main trending thing a lot of the time. So I try and every one of these aspects has a mental health situation around it.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, if a person is injured because of a knee, they're mentally fed up and they're exhausted, and they're exhausted from carrying the strain of the pain and the strain of wanting to look and feel good, the strain of wanting to have confidence and be proud of themselves. And then they're trying to battle their head. So there's the main groundwork, I always think, has to be done with your mind. And if your mindset is done correctly, that sounds awful, I don't mean it right, that it's done correctly, but like I always try and portray that your mind is your most powerful tool, and it's the strongest muscle that you have. And if that muscle is pumping away the way we want it to work in order to get through our daily life and our daily routine, everything else kind of falls into place and we can achieve our goals much better that way.
So how do you encourage your clients to kind of, to get a bit more level-headed or to kind of understand mental health?
Well, a lot, when I do get inquiries that come in, you can get the basic one. Hi, I'm looking to lose 10 pounds. Hi, I'm looking to lose this. But majority of the time is, hi, Laura, I had a baby and I just don't have time to do this. I'm finding it very difficult to find time to do this. I'm finding it very difficult to do A, B, C, and D, and then I have no time to exercise and it's time to go to bed. Let's take this one as a typical scenario. especially for women as well. So this can be a typical example of a mother working 9 to 5, or mother not working at all and running a house all along, which is also a very tough job to do. And then they're trying to fit in their exercise. But I think that a lot of it is becoming, the stress of it is that they're looking, fixating themselves on other bodies that they see online and they see on social media. And I think that they need to look like this at a certain way, and how come they can all do it and I can't do it? But I always try to remind them when they do message me and they think, I can't work out 5 times a week. That's fine. You do not have to work out 5 times a week. Those who can, fantastic. Those who can't, that's all right too. I try and make them think that they're not alone. Now, I don't have any children myself, but they're not alone in that situation. There's other women in the same boat as them who don't have the time, or who are working, or their husband is on shift work, or their partner, whatever, and they haven't got time to do this. But I always try and make them that they're not alone. And if you do 3 workouts a week, fantastic. Well done. High five to you. And if they're 15 minutes, that's a huge achievement for you from the person who couldn't do anything last week. Look at you. Well done too. You should be so proud you did 2 workouts this week. And don't look at anybody else. They're not living in your shoes, or they don't have 3 kids running around the house. You know, they, like, everyone's life is so different. And they think that because on social media and stuff, I think that's, even though social media is fantastic, I think it has an awful role to play sometimes in the mindset of fitness, you know?
Yeah, so you're basically taking each person as on a case-by-case basis, and you're kind of saying, right, well, 15 minutes, you know, for 3 days in a row is a big deal for one person, but this other person can do, you know, an hour, or can this do 4 or 5 hours a week.
Exactly. I mean, take you, for example. Like, you could do an hour a day 5 times a week easily, no problem.
Yeah.
Because you have the time to do it. You're not just in the coronavirus world, but in the real world, you know?
Yeah.
You have time to do that. I have time to do that. But I get up super early to try and do it. But some days I wouldn't do it if I wasn't feeling well either. And then you have a lot of women who are like, oh, I couldn't do it this week because, you know, I had my period and it was a bad week for me and mentally and all this. And that's a lot to take into. And people think because they have a period that they need to battle through it or whatever, and their timing wasn't right. They couldn't lift heavy, or they had no energy to get off the couch. That is totally fine. Your body is exhausted. Like, there's 1 week in the month where your body is just like, please stop, give me a break. And you have to listen to it.
So one of the questions I did want to ask, and this is kind of like a personal question, but what are the signs of, like, putting mental health aside and kind of just talking about the body subjectively, what are the signs of, like, fatigue, like actual fatigue and like tiredness that you have done too much for your body? Is that a legit question? Because I always kind of see
what you mean. Like, I know now, I broadcasted, but I recently started running. And the only reason why I've known, you see, I kind of fell into the whole gym routine. So I never really found myself, I used kind of the same thing in and out, I knew what I was doing, but now running is new to me. So I'm starting to get tired a lot faster now. The same as if you were to take on a program with me, it's going to be new to you. So you're going to get tired fairly fast because it's a shock to the body.
Yeah.
So when your body is tired or goes into exhaustion, you'll find yourself hungry and you'll want to eat much more. Like, you'll find yourself picking more. You'll find yourself, oh my God, I can't get out of the bed this morning. Why? You'll also find yourself in bed at night or in the morning and you feel as if your legs are moving and they're not.
Yeah.
You know, like, you kind of feel a bit of a twinge going on, as if, God, I can feel my muscles are, they're actually in the bed and they're like lead, but yet they still feel like they're moving. Pure sign of exhaustion. There's a lot of lactic acid built up there, if that's the case, and plenty of stretching would need to be done to release that, to release the tiredness amongst the muscle groups, you know?
Yeah. All right. So I know mental health is a big thing, and I totally appreciate that. I love how we kind of started with that from the perspective of kind of tackling, you know, a person's fitness levels. But let's talk about the body and some kind of fitness myths that are out there. Mm-hmm. What kind of trends do you see amongst your clients or in the fitness industry that you just, like, is there any specific trends, whether they're nutrition or fitness, that are just ridiculous?
Oh, God. It's funny. I mean, I can't think off the top of my head, but usually now I'd hear something like, the scales is huge.
Okay.
with okay. women especially. Now, don't get me wrong, I'm the same. I still continue to stand it and nearly hop it off the wall every so often because same thing. I mean, the scales is another one. And I think it's all to do with the Weight Watchers days and all that years ago, you know, with losing pounds and stuff. But like people have to think if they're now, like strength has become the new, strong is the new skinny, as they say.
Yeah,
and that's the new kind of quote that they've been using the last couple of years. And it's true, you have a healthier look about you, you know. So you're gaining muscle, if that's the case. You're shedding fat, yet gaining muscles. Therefore, muscle will, that's another myth in itself. Muscle weighs heavier than fat. What give and take from it. I personally, from my standpoint, do believe that muscle does weigh heavier than fat. Some people will disagree with that. I think it's true. For example, take me.
Is that not scientifically proven though that muscle weighs heavier than fat?
I actually don't quote me on that. I actually never looked at it properly because I was more.
I'm sure it is. Yeah,
I think so too. If I'm being honest, but then if you Google other things, they'll say it's a myth. So
okay,
yeah, it's a weird one. But like even me, for example, now over the last couple of months. Due to personal reasons, I didn't exercise a huge amount for about 2 months, December, January kind of away. And I always would kind of come in around 63, 64 kgs. And I went down to 61 kgs because I wasn't lifting weights and I wasn't going to the gym as often as I would have been doing. And I lost weight. And then I got better myself and came back around and I went back to the gym. And next thing, my weight has now gone up to 63.5 kgs again. I actually only checked it this morning. So I do believe in that because I'm lifting weights now again, you know,
yeah.
So, but my clothes are looser on me. So,
right,
that's,
yeah.
So that's the other myth of it. But then going back to the scales, as in you'd have a woman who would weigh themselves and they're, I don't know, 140 pounds, let's say. Then next week they're 135 and then they get their period and they're 137. Oh my God, how am I up 2 pounds? I don't know what's going on. I've been great all week and I've exercised everything. I can't understand this. So then my first question always is, are you due your period? Are you due it or do you have it?
Yeah.
And usually if they're due it, they will hold water retention prior to that, which will gain weight on the scales. And that sort of thing. And then they'll deflate again, as you will know, a couple of days later. But like, there's a lot of that in it too. So I always try and get across to women with that scales is because you have women who suffer from endless womb conditions, hormone conditions, all these bloody things that go on that none of us women like aside of your period, right? So like you get your period 1 week, that's water retention, that's hormones. You want to eat the legs off the table. Sometimes you have to eat the legs off the bloody table and it's the only way to survive or you will be done for murder and one of the family members or something like that. And then the following week, another thing hits. It could be some women are, I hate to say this in a weird way, but not lucky they've only a period, but like if they have a period, but then you have another problem, you know,
on top of that,
on top of your period that you're like, feck this, I can't do it. I just can't do it. And they end up having a chocolate bar. All right. So what? Like you had a chocolate bar. That's fine. But don't blame that on the scales. Your body's holding water. Your womb could be swelling. There's so much going on that you can't. And then I say, okay, have you taken your body measurements like with the tape? Yeah, I haven't. It's weird because they're down 5 inches. That's why, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. So there's a lot of different things. The scales is really just your gravitational pull towards Earth. It's not actually.
Totally. And it's an awful mindset for women to have is that bloody scales, you know? I mean, even this morning, I stood on it and I knew full well, because I'm mid-cycle of mine, and I knew full well by sitting on it, it was going to be bad news. What I do, I stood on it and I was like a lunatic for the morning. Like, why? Yeah. I don't know. I just drew it on myself.
would you encourage people to do measurements, although they're not kind of accurate or they're kind of hard to make accurate? Would you encourage more people to go by measurements as opposed to the scales?
Yes.
Or is it kind of, it's like, you know, you're measuring, it's like measuring a football field. It's like you're better off measuring the full length of it than measuring portions of it. So it's kind of like with the weight, it's probably like over a longer period of time. If weight is your goal, losing or gaining, it's probably over a longer period of time tells a better story than yesterday, today, and tomorrow, and the next day.
Like, this is it. I mean, like you can go, you can go by your clothes as well. You know, I've often, everyone has that pair of jeans, everyone has that top that their arms can fit in without the bulge. Everyone can fit in without sitting down if you haven't opened the top button on the jean, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Everyone has that. But then again, their weight, like, as I say, I'm back up to my normal weight now and I'm sliding into my clothes. But yeah, I wasn't prior to that because I'd lost muscle but gained body fat, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Because I was eating all around me and I'm not using my muscle to do so. But then you have people who are genuinely overweight and they rely on the scales because, you know, excuse me, the body fat measurements won't be accurate for them. As you say, they do move every week. You know, you're not always going to, more or less, you'll hit roughly around the same point. But definitely go by your clothes, and until you get to the point where you're comfortable with trying maybe maintaining the weight, or you might just lose another 3 or 4 pounds onto that and go back to maintain the weight, that kind of thing, is when you should kind of go by the tape, the measuring tape.
Yeah. So another question for you. What do you kind of say to people, to your clients who don't like working out? Do you get that a lot?
Can I go into that group? Am I joking? I mean, yeah. So you have people who don't work, like, let's be honest. You have people who absolutely despise it completely. But then you'd be like, but I don't mind going for a jog. But I don't mind playing tennis. But I don't mind camogie or something like that. Okay, but that's exercise. They think because they're not training for a marathon or they're not squatting 200 pounds that it's not exercise. You know,
yeah.
Like, you should always go to what you like doing so that you will stick with it. Because if you start something like, I don't know, let's say kickboxing, and you're told you're going to burn 700 calories in this workout and it's the best thing for you, but you absolutely are allergic to the whole thought of going in that door from the night before, going to bed, getting up and going in there, what is the point in destroying your soul into doing kickboxing, you know? When you could probably just go down the road and play a game of squash or tennis and that's what you enjoy doing.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, no, I appreciate that, because there is a lot of kind of, it's you know, oh, you're not into fitness, you're not in the gym lifting weights, you're not kind of, you know, as you said, out running a marathon, but there's other things to that. And that's one thing, because when I lost a bunch of weight, like, a lot of people were like, you know, I don't like to run, or I don't like to go to, I don't like the gym, was a huge thing. And I would say, well, just don't go to Zumba class, go
absolutely
to Irish, do Irish dancing, do ballet, do whatever you feel like, do swimming, whatever you feel like doing. It's definitely
so true. Or what I also notice is that you have people like, but I don't really work out. I'm like, at all. And they're like, no, I just do Pilates. And I'm like, would you enjoy it? And they're like, yeah. I'm like, that's exercise. Like,
yeah,
Pilates is an actual exercise class.
Yeah.
Yeah. But do you really think so? I'm like, yeah, you can get fantastic results from Pilates. I personally don't do it myself. It's just, I haven't got the time for it. I'd love to do it, but fantastic if you do it and you enjoy it, great. They shouldn't doubt that it's not an exercise. Your body is moving, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And what I've heard is Pilates is super tough, so I want to try
tough.
It. So moving on to kind of nutrition, or moving into nutrition, should I say, one of the, I don't want to talk about food in a negative way, or anything. And I know from, you know, knowing you for a while, that your kind of perspective and outlook on your food and diet is to kind of be conscious, but to also not to restrict, or not to kind of, you know, put too much emphasis on a certain specific diet. Yep. Do you see any categories that keep coming up? Say maybe it's sugar, like people can't get rid of sugar, or it's carbohydrates in the form of bread and pasta and everything else. Do you see anything like that is not a big no-no? I don't want to say a big no-no, but a kind of saying, well, that's significantly going to inhibit your results, or, you know, it's going to make you feel lethargic.
I don't know, because again, this is my personal view. People could argue, but I don't. And going back to what you say of, I try and portray the whole balance thing, work hard, play hard, I suppose you could say. As I try and tell all my, if you are following me online, follow me on Instagram, you know for a fact I'm going to be having a can of Bulmers on a Friday night, 100%, without a shadow of a doubt. And I will have my, I will, well, when life resumes, will be eating out at weekend as well. You know, I do take that one day at the weekend where there's absolutely no rules will apply at all. But then saying that, Monday to Friday, I don't eat chicken and broccoli out of a box either. Because you have to live your life. You have to have carbs, you have to have proteins, you have to have fats, because what's going to happen when you go on holidays, hopefully this year, and let's just say you're in Spain and you're on an all-inclusive holiday and you've been starving and having no carbohydrates for 3 months prior to going this holiday. 3 months in, then you can't move because your body has no idea what's happened to it. And then it'll blow up. And then if not, put on more weight because of that, because it's starved for so long. If you starve your body of something for so long, you'll actually end up gaining weight.
Yeah.
And like, think of it as a car. If you get into a car tomorrow morning and you didn't put fuel into the car, you're not going to get very far. So if you starve yourself, if you wake up, if you go, the last time you ate your dinner last night was, let's say, 6-7 o'clock, and you don't eat, which I see a huge trend in people not eating breakfast. It baffles me. But think of it this way. If you don't eat your breakfast and you only eat your lunch, or you may, I've seen people who don't eat anything until 2 or 3 o'clock in the afternoon. So they've been starving since 7 p.m. the night before. I can't do the maths, but that's hours and hours and hours of not eating. So think of your body as a car. You're not going to get very far. You're not going to get far at all. So therefore, your organs will protect itself first. And then the first thing you do put into your body at 2 or 3 o'clock is going to initially be stored as fat, because it will go around your organs on your core. Hence why people are always concerned that I don't really eat much, but I have a stomach that I want to get rid of. It's because it's protecting the organs. So therefore, it's going to swell, if that makes sense.
Yeah, so that's one of the things. You're, after answering the question, and it's not necessarily sugar or carbs, but it's actually skipping meals and not eating and kind of having that negative effect, or kind of boomerang effect, I suppose you could call it.
Totally. Like, I had a girl last week and I was looking at her overview on the app, and she was exercising 4 or 5 times a week. She was flying it. She was rating the workouts between 7 to 9 of hardness out of 10 of toughness. And I was like, okay, she's been challenged. She's fine. She's grand. And then the following week, she was like, look, I'm just finding it very hard. My weight isn't moving, or my measurements, nothing is moving. And I'm very good at my food. And I said, look, she said, I know I'm not doing one of your nutrition plans, but I just don't know what I'm doing wrong. So I was like, I want to help her. Like, so I said, do me a favor and email me what you would eat. Let's just say Monday to Friday in a time frame. So she emailed me, and from what I was looking at, I put her weight, height and date of birth and what she wanted to achieve into my own software here, what I would calculate for people. And it came up that she was under eating 450 calories short every single day.
Okay, wow.
So I messaged her and I was like, okay, don't mean to scare you, but you're going to have to up this. It's way too low. I knew it by looking at it, but I just wanted to make double sure, to be sure of what I would give her, let's just say, if she joined the nutrition side of it. And she was like, okay, the following week, she'd lost 3 pounds.
Yeah.
And she was like,
and probably felt better as well.
Better. She had her sleep, her energy. She said she was working from home. She was exhausted and she couldn't understand why she was so exhausted. And she was sleeping better, she said, and she was worrying less, you know, with obviously the COVID stress and everything right now. And she said she couldn't believe it. But that's the thing. Amazing. It's another mentality that people think they have to starve. You don't. You actually gain weight by starving.
Yeah. And so, well, I mean, you'll gain it after you start eating when you're starving, because you'll just, it'll retain everything.
The other side of it. So yeah. Like you're hitting for a battle regardless, you know, but you have to do it correctly. You know, you can't just say, all right, grand, so I can go to McDonald's so I can get the calories that I missed. No, like, do it right.
So what's your thoughts on intermittent fasting? I can't say
fasting,
that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is the one I'm unsure of.
Okay.
I have had clients who message me and I would, on my meal plans, I would do breakfast, snack, lunch, snack, dinner, snack. Because it's what majority of world would probably go with if they were to eat throughout their day. With the intermittent fasting, I've had people saying, can I eat this through my time frames of eating? Now, I thought this was unusual because it has happened to not many, but I've had 3 or 4. So the first one, I was very unsure. I was like, oh my God, how is this going to go now? I was like, but if I can't, like, okay, like I can only advise her as best I can. So I was like, look, once you kind of eat all the calories in the time frame, and it worked for her because it did it for her before. Her energy seemed fine. Her sleep seemed fine. Personally, for me, it wouldn't work at all. I just wouldn't be able to survive the day.
You wouldn't like that at all?
No, I'd find that very hard to get through the day now.
Okay.
But then it suits her, you know? Yeah. And I suppose it's like going for a run. You like to go cycling. Same thing. I don't like cycling. I like running, you know?
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, yeah. No, I think I've dabbled in it, but kind of like not been consistent.
Yeah.
But it would be something that I would always, I would easily do that. Now I could go for a long period. I just have a very low appetite and slow metabolism in general. But it's just, it's one of those things that was all the rage. And then
it was, yeah.
It kind of just, people started pulling away at it and kind of saying, doesn't look to be proving any results. And people were abusing the fact that, like, oh, you can just eat whatever you want in that period.
Yeah,
that you're allowed
time frame.
Yeah.
But then, like, you'd have, like, people, I don't know, I've had people then saying to me, in that time from then afterwards, they're running to the toilet. Like, but then they're running to the toilet and they've just lost everything, any nutrition that they just put into them, you know? So there was that side of it too. And then too, there was the Atkins diet. There was all mad things there going on for ages.
Yeah, I always go back to when we were like cavemen and like humans as beings. Like we don't come from a place where you were fasting. You came from a place that you had, like, you know, seeds and nuts or whatever that is the keto stuff, and then they, you know, they kill the fish in the water and they eat the fresh fish, and you know, that's the kind of diet that they had,
absolutely.
Like cavemen had. So I don't know.
Yeah,
it's interesting. I want to go back and ask you about the whole treats and quote unquote treats, because you know, we're not animals or dogs that need to be, you know, given treats. But you talk about your Bulmers on a Friday night, and whether that's one can or more than that is...
Oh, there is always more.
There's nobody's business. We're not going to question you on that today.
Can't stop on the one. Go on anyway.
No, I just... Any advice for people who kind of... They might love a can of Bulmers. They might love a Dairy Milk. They might love, you know, bag of popcorn or something. Where do you pick it up and draw the line? Like, there's the whole 80-20 rule I've heard and everything. I know everybody has this common sense, like, you know, right, one Dairy Milk a week is grand, one or two drinks a week is grand. But do you have any advice on kind of drawing that line for people when they want to say, yeah, I do want to look forward to a treat and I want to incorporate that into a balanced diet?
Yeah. Yeah. So you do have that, but that's always the fear as well. With people, it does take this, as you said, going back to being like an animal, it does take training. As in, you have to kind of train your control, if that makes sense, like your self-control to a degree, right? So it also comes down to the fact that, okay, let's say you're good Monday to Friday for the first week and you're like, okay, I'm going to have my treat now tonight. I'm going to have three cans of Bulmers, whatever. Grand, you with three cans of Bulmers. Then there's always that fear the next morning. Feck it. Sure, I did it last night. I broke it. I'm going to do it again tonight. Feck it. It's Sunday. Sure, it's bank holiday tomorrow. I'm going to do it again. You know, that's the mindset you're afraid of. There is that side of it. But I think from what I've seen with people is that in the first week or two, let's say in a meal plan, I always sit there like, oh my God, this is a lot. Like, and it's a lot. It's overwhelming joining a meal plan because you're like, you're being told what to eat. You're being, you know, you're being told what to do when you go shopping. You're told, you're given a shopping list, all that kind of stuff. And then you're coming home and it's a Saturday night and your movie's on, your man or your woman are sitting next to you eating a bag of popcorn and ice cream and you're staring at them. So, like, I mean, that's no way to live your life either. That's not what I'm about. So if your thing is to have your three cans of Bulmers or more, whatever, if your thing is to have your Dairy Milk and a can of Coke, fine, have your Dairy Milk and a can of Coke, you know?
Yeah.
But try and not let it carry over the next day. The next day is technically a new day, so you have to start it again. Now, don't get me wrong. Like, I would have my cans last night. Tonight, now we're going to go... Obviously, because things are closed, we're going to go out and get a takeaway pizza and bring it back here. That will be tonight. And then tomorrow we'll be good again. Or it could be tomorrow we'll be bold and we could be good today. We try and monitor that. But with clients, sorry, I'm veering off point completely. I allow them to do that. Like, even though the meal plan is set for 7 days, I allow them to do that. But then I've always noticed that, like, week two, week three, because they've seen such results in the first week, they could see 4 to 6 pounds come off. And then they're like, oh my God, like, I worked so hard. It wasn't actually that, it wasn't actually that difficult in the end. I still could have my Coke and stuff and I still lost my weight. But then next weekend, they're like, I won't have that now. I'll see now if I can get away with having that extra can of Bulmers tonight because I did so well last week. I want to see. So they start thinking of, no, I can't. I can do it. Their mindset changes.
Yeah.
But then again, sometimes, again, it does. I know I'm going back to the head again, but it's life for some people is just so difficult. It can be so hard. And some people suffer chronically with anxiety and stuff like that. And they find that's their crutch, you know?
Yeah. How do you deal with your mental health, or is there anything that you is important to you just to kind of keep yourself mentally healthy?
Exercise is one thing, but funnily enough, as I say, I went through a personal thing there a couple of months ago, and usually it would be my go-to to escape, and it was the furthest thing from my mind at that point. I couldn't do it. So it just goes to show that it does for a lot of things, but it didn't for me that time in particular. But a lot of it was, I have to kind of go into my own and deal with myself first before I can deal with anybody else. So I do kind of shut things off. Yeah. And that's okay. I had to, for a long time, I felt guilty about shutting things off, going to a party, or I said no to weddings coming up to it because with anxiety, it just got so bad. I used to be sweating the thought of even walking down a church. It wasn't even my wedding now, by the way. And I wasn't even a family member. It was far from a guest I was. And I'd be nervous of a crowd. And this is coming from somebody who would stand in front of a room and teach a class. But that's where I feel most invisible when I'm in teaching a class, because that's where I'm so comfortable. You know, I'm always the class clown. I'm always the first one to stand in a step aerobics class, a spinning class, and all right, come on, let's go. We're going to go in 3, 2, and everyone thinks I'm the life of the party. But I'm actually, I don't mean this in a bad way, I mentally switch off then. I'm not there, because I've gone into a different, they say Beyonce, I'm not going to compare myself to Beyonce, but okay, whatever. She goes into Sasha Fierce and she's on stage and she's not like that off stage. It's exactly the same thing. I'm on, when I'm off, I have to come off. You know, does that make sense?
So you allow yourself to have that quiet time and to kind of switch off, because you would 110% come off as the type of person who is just ready to rock. You would come across very energetic, very, you know, you would be well able to lead a class, as you said, and things like that. But it's kind of, as you said, kind of coming back into your own and kind of just retreating back into yourself. And that's, you know, important.
Yeah,
as well.
And the life is so, and I wear my heart on my sleeve. Anyone will tell you that. Sometimes I'm probably a bit too open, but I'm the life, the soul of every party when I'm feeling it. If I'm having a grand old time, but if I'm not, and then things aren't bad, and there's days that I'm I can't even get out of the bed. Another thing is, I actually, this may sound weird, but I had to learn how to say no. And the more I got stronger in saying the word no, the more I felt way more confident to learn how to deal with anxiety. I mean, it comes down, as I was talking to a friend yesterday, and she was saying the same thing, that she suffers with it also. And she was saying, you know, it's mad. If you, let's say you ask me to go to brunch with you and the girls next weekend. Today, I'm in a great mood. So I could be oh, so up for that. Can't wait. I don't know what to wear. It's going to be a great day. Then tomorrow, oh my God, why did I tell Stephanie I'm going to meet you next weekend? I can't do that. And then one day it'd be a different story. Tuesday, I would talk to myself again about something else. And my whole week would have just, and this might not happen at all. I could have a great week and be dying to meet Steph and the girls right up until next weekend. But then I could also go through a phase of talking to myself for 3 or 4 days saying, you can't go, you just can't do it. You just can't do it.
Yeah.
And then would come down to it. And then I'd feel really guilty and I'd cancel last minute. So now what I've kind of learned to do is not make a decision on anything if I'm going through an anxiety patch until closer to the date, because I end up freaking myself out completely.
Yeah. Yeah. So you've kind of noticed those behavior patterns and what you have to do to cope with them and to get yourself in the right headspace, because we all need that time. And I think the biggest thing is to allow ourselves that time and to recognize it and to say, you know, well, hang on a minute, I actually need to take a few steps back and to chill out a little bit.
Well, I mean,
you know?
That's it. And with anxiety, you go into this mad thing of you're great at telling yourself the most amazing imaginary stories that are real life now in your head, by the way.
Yeah.
And who, that are coming, I'm telling you, and they are feckin' full swing flying around the head. And then next thing, if you're great at making those stories, another trick that I've well have been taught to learn by a life coach at home, she only told me only up to recently when I was on the phone to her, and she was like, you know, you do wake up in the morning and you have a choice. You can either join the circus or you can say, I don't want to come to work today. It's totally up to you. But she said, by all means, join the circus again for another day and wear yourself out, girl, and don't get any work done and don't get any exercise done. Or you could say, nah, I'm closing that off now today and I'm going to do some exercise and get myself sorted. Or yeah. Another thing she told me to imagine is that I'm on the train Cork to Dublin. And if I'm on the train, because obviously I'm from Cork, so if I'm on the train Cork to Dublin, and you know the train keeps getting faster and faster and faster, and she was kind of using that as your anxiety, and it's going bigger and it's getting bigger and it's getting bigger. You have a choice. You either keep going up towards Dublin or you cut and you get off it. She goes, because by the time you get to Dublin, you're going to explode, like, and it's going to be all too much. And she was like, you have a choice to get off at Limerick Junction or you can just forget about it.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, it's kind of, you have a choice to buy into those thoughts and to buy into it all. Like you kind of have to say, no, I'm not going to have anything to do with it today, or you exactly. know, I'm not going to let that talk kind of.
But that's hard too.
Simmer. Again, it's very hard.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. But again, it's because it becomes so exhausting, Steph. You know, because it gets to the point where if you are going through that wave for so long, for a week, two, sometimes God, it can go on for so long. You're so exhausted. You're like, yeah, I just have to get off the train. You know, I just can't, you know?
Yeah.
No, but it totally. Becomes stronger. Those waves become lessened. The more you talk to yourself about getting off the train or, you know, slowing yourself down a bit, the waves don't go on as long, thankfully, sometimes as they... Yeah, you kind of plan them out in your circus head.
And that's true. And it takes work to get to that point. Yeah. You know, it's just consistent. It's like fitness itself. It's like you have to... work out that muscle. Going back to what you said at the very start, you have to work out that muscle, and
it's so, you know, true. Like it yeah. is the biggest muscle you have, and it has to be right. You can't go for a run with a strained quad, like, you know. So
yeah, totally. Okay, so I have a few more fitness questions for you before we wrap it up, and these are kind of just ones that people might be interested in if they are already kind of taking part in some sort of fitness. So is there such thing as a plateau? In a sense,
as in,
of I've been doing this for weeks. And...
Oh, sorry. Yeah, 100%. Yes, I see what you mean. Sorry, you lost me there. So are you kind of saying I'm doing this 6-7 months, nothing's changing?
Yes. Yeah. You've either gained muscle, lost weight, build up strength, whatever it is, you've gotten some of it. You've gotten to a point where you're like, Jesus, I'm after making a huge difference now. And then it just stops. It just stays consistent and it just kind of plateaus.
Yeah. 100%. So what that usually would be is that your body is now 110% know what's coming next. So take, me, for example, when I lived in Cork, I was teaching spinning classes every day and I would do personal training and weights. Well, personal training, I wasn't doing any exercise, sorry. So let's say spinning every day and then I would do weights 3 times a week. My body knew what was coming next all the time. It mm-hmm. knew I was spinning at 6 o'clock. It knew I was doing it again in the morning at 6:30. It knew I was going to do a strength session on a Wednesday. So I was never getting, not that you want to be stiff and sore, you don't always gain results by feeling that way, but sometimes you do want to have a little bit of a twinge here and there to think, oh, I actually worked that body part today. But none of that was happening for me anymore because my body knew what was coming. So I was plateauing, but I didn't have any weight to lose. I wasn't training for a competition. It was doing it basically to kind of, and it was just, it suited my work schedule. It was in the motion of it. And if I change anything, it would have gone outside my work schedule. That was personally me. However, if it's someone else and they want to lose more weight than what they've already achieved and they're like, I can't break this. How am I going to make it work? You have to challenge the body in a different way.
Okay.
What I mean by that is if you were doing weights and spinning all the time, you now need to change that. Change maybe one of them. Don't change both because the body will know what is going on. So let's say you change spinning then for a kickboxing class or some sort of HIIT workout, aerobic, TRX maybe, something like that. But totally shock the body into thinking, what is she making me do now?
Yeah. Okay. I know that a lot of people talk about that, or whether it be, you know, food or fitness. That makes sense.
Because like when I moved over here, obviously I had no more spinning and I was doing kickboxing then, because that's where I got the job. And my body shape changed again because I started doing something different.
Yeah. It's funny, isn't it, how quickly your body adapts or changes and adapts.
Even with the running the last couple of weeks, because I can't go to the gym, I've noticed another change again in how my body's looking.
Yeah. I know, it's funny. It really is. Yeah. So when you talk about lifting weights, or when people talk about lifting weights in general, by lifting light and doing more reps, or lifting heavy and doing less reps, there's obviously a huge difference. What is the basic way to explain
that? Yeah, this is something people do get confused about a lot. So if you're looking for the heart rate, toning, endurance side of things, burning calories kind of a thing, you know, at a fast rate, you keep the weight low and you keep the reps high, like 12 to 15, maybe 20. Sometimes if it's a bodyweight exercise, you could even go too far as 30. That kind of a thing. Now, the likes of what weight you would use depends on what you're used to lifting. If it was me, for example, I'd probably grab 6, 7, 8 kgs. If I was swinging a kettlebell in a kind of a HIIT session like that, I'd probably swing a 20. But that's what people are different. Some people have never then done weights before and don't know what to do. So 2, 3 kg might be loads. That's for like a toning side of things and to burn calories at that rate, to get the heart rate up through a workout. If you want to do a strength side of things, then you keep the reps, which is like how many times you push it, to about 5. And you should be struggling on rep 3. So let's say I'm doing a bench press and the weight is very heavy. I should be kind of struggling at rep 3 and push for 4 and 5. But by the time you don't want your technique to drop then either. So you don't want 4 and 5 to be completely all over the shop and your legs flying off the side of the bench and all sorts. So if you can push the last rep, you don't push the last rep, you leave it there.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. And then
if you warm up as well, you don't go straight into a strength session with the heaviest weight you did last. No, like you do like 4 to 5 sets, which is how many times you do that round. Let's say you have 4 exercises, you do 4 rounds of that. But the first round should always be a medium weight. And then you can go up as you go along through the rest of the sets, if that makes sense.
Okay, yeah, no, that does. And what would you advise your clients to deal with muscle soreness?
The foam roller.
Like, just cope with it.
Oh, cope, sorry.
Yeah, just cope, like, just get on with it.
Well, there's that side of it too. But I mean, anything new to your body is going to hurt, you know? Like, I started kickboxing, my body was sore for about 2 months. I didn't know what was going on because I wasn't used to it. And then it eased off. I started running, my legs don't know what is going on. I have to foam roll them every single night. Because your body is getting used to it, but your body will just get, now my legs are fine, and I'm so sure you've noticed the same thing. You will be sore for anything new you start off first. You just have to try and go through the motion a little bit of it. Have baths to relax the muscle groups if you can. And even the next, after the exercise, obviously stretch. But the next day, if you're sore, let's say after lifting a heavy weight session, do some body weight squats and some light push-ups. Nothing too major. Get the muscles moving again. If you stay still and stiff and don't stretch or don't move or walk around like a poker, you're going to get more stiff and sore because your muscles haven't moved at all now, you know?
Yeah, that's one thing that I noticed was since quarantine, I've been doing probably more running. I'm not probably as active just because of the day-to-day, but probably just more running in general than I was. And I'm finding, like, even like today I ran 11 kilometers, right? And I'm sore.
Wow.
Yeah, like I'm sore now, like, but tomorrow I feel like I will feel better if I go out and run a 5K tomorrow.
100%.
That's my pattern, is like I've been doing 10 or 11 kilometers and then the next day I'll run a 5K and it won't be sore or anything else. And it almost feels like it almost feels relaxing for my body to just get it out and to bang it out. So I always wondered, like, I always thought, oh God, if you're going to run 11K, the next day should be a rest day because you need to let your muscles recuperate. But it doesn't always feel that way.
You know, yeah. Yeah, like Thursday night there now, I think I did like 8 fairly lively And then I came back and I was like, oh my God, Friday, I'm actually going to die. But I think I did like, I went out and did a 3K walk and then I ended on a light jog and I felt much better after it.
Yeah, yeah.
You're right. Your body has to keep moving, yeah.
Yeah, and I was even just kind of, I've been noticing it and I said it to my mom and I was like, oh my God, like I feel so much better if I just stretch out the next day and just go for another, like even if it's a 3 or 5K run and just to get it out of my system. But I think, to your point, if you let your body go like lead and kind of walk around like a poker, which
this
I think,
it?
Yeah, you kind of stiffen up then.
It only gets worse. And then the next time you go for a run, you're literally running like, I don't know what, down the road because you're in so much pain, you know?
Yeah, that's been me like many times. I'm like, just like limping into a run.
This is it. And then you wonder why your knee is sore because you're compensating the pain to the other leg and all the injuries start. And oh my God.
Yeah, yeah. Keep it moving.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much. I can't, it's nearly been an hour, would you believe?
I'm not surprised. I've been known to talk.
Yeah, no, I appreciate it. And I know, just to end it on, I know that you talk a bit about endometriosis on your Instagram and anybody who follows you might know that as well. So definitely this podcast part two, I definitely want to delve into that and just bring awareness to it and to share a journey. And I'm hopefully you're open to that.
Oh, of course. I'd be delighted to, yeah.
You know, just connect with people. And, you know, it's always good when you hear other people's stories and you feel that reassurance that, you know, you're really not alone. So,
100%. Yeah.
That's your invitation.
Especially with the weight side of things as well, though, you know?
Exactly. Yeah. It's tough. So, we'll look forward to that one.
Perfect. Well, thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate your time.
Thank you, Laura. I'll talk to you soon.
All right, Jordy. See you soon.
Bye. Thank you.